Today, we'll talk about everything I learned on my June trip, including all about the new attractions. That's coming up on this episode 128 of WW Prep to Go. Hello and welcome to WW Prep to Go, where we talk strategy and ideas for people planning their Disney World trips. I am your host, Shannon Albert from WDWPrepSchool.com. Thank you for being here. I know it has been a while, and if you thought I might have forgotten how to do this, you might be right. This might have been my third attempt to create this intro. I was recording it, and I was trying to Snapchat the intro at the same time, and that was a lot of coordination, but I think I did it this time. Anyway, so I am freshly back from a month-long trip to Disney World. I spent June 3rd through July 1st there. And the reason was because there are so many new things going on that I wanted to do it. And when I started doing the math, I figured out that I could stay off-site for a month for the same price as I could stay 5 or 6 nights on-site, at least in a deluxe. And so I just decided to go ahead and do the off-site version. And because of that, I was able to catch all the new stuff that opened throughout the month and do it multiple times so that I could come back and teach you all about it so you could do it on your trips without all the trial and error that I had to go through. So we're going to get into all the things that I learned on my June trip in just a minute. As always, I do want to remind you to follow on social media. It's so much fun. It's one of my favorite parts of my job. And the Facebook page tends to be where I'm most active. And there's also Instagram, Twitter, and Snapchat. As I mentioned, I Snapchatted the intro to this and posted it there. I also Snapchatted my entire trip. I don't tend to snap as much when I'm non-Disney stuff, but occasionally I'll put something up. Anyway, I think Snapchat's really fun. On all platforms, I'm WDW Prep School, so be sure to follow along there. I will have a quick tip of the day at the end. I will not have news because I do want to start putting these episodes out regularly again, just like I used to. And in order to do that the most efficiently, it's easier if I can record several episodes at a time when I have the ideas fresh in my head. And when I attack news, when I put news on the end of those, they start to feel out of date if I do that. So I'm going to make them kind of like the old style where I just did a topic and a tip and put it out. I'm not going to commit to any schedule right now, but I do hope that it can become weekly again, especially because I have so many ideas having just been there. So let's dive in. So as I said, I was there June 3rd, and one of the things that really stood out to me about this trip was, first of all, that June was not as busy as usual. This was probably my 5th or 6th trip in June. Our family trips have mostly taken place this time of year because as soon as school was out, then we would hop on a plane and go to Disney World for our family vacations. But this one was not as busy. There are a lot of theories about that, of why it wasn't as busy. One theory is that the Brazilian economy is not doing so great, and Brazilian people are a huge part of the Disney World customer base, and so they are often in the parks, and there weren't as many this time as usual. Another theory is that because the one-day ticket prices vary depending on when you go, that the parks were less busy because the one-day tickets were at their peak pricing for summer. So a lot of people, when they're looking at the prices for a one-day ticket, especially people that are just kind of on road trips or local people that just want to go for a day in the summer, they aren't as likely to want to pay that premium rate. I know at Disneyland, they have a similar thing where the tickets are at peak pricing, and July 4th was not at capacity like it often is. So I think that could be a factor. But whatever the reason is, June was not as busy, but what June was more hot than usual. I'm used to hot temperatures at Disney World. I never knew Disney World in cooler temperatures until the last few years when I started going at random times throughout the year. So I'm used to hot temperatures, but it was 105 to 108 heat index every day, which is exhausting. I don't care who you are. So because of that, I often would only do a half day when I went into the parks, with the evenings actually being my favorite. But if I was out during the day, I became just an air conditioned seeker. I was making use of all the shortcuts to, like, on Main Street at Magic Kingdom. If you enter the shops at the front of the park, you can walk through them for quite a while down Main Street. to stay in the air conditioning as long as possible. At Epcot, the two interventions buildings have paths in them that will take you over to the other side. So instead of walking the outdoor pass, you can walk the indoor pass and the nice cold air conditioning. So I just became a seeker of air conditioning because it was so hot and we were there for so long that it was exhausting. So lower crowds, but hotter temperatures. I don't know if I had a choice between higher crowds and lower temperatures or lower crowds, I don't know which one I would pick, but it was definitely very uncomfortable. Another thing about this June trip was that it was my first time really staying off site. I stayed at the Swan Dolphin about a year and a half ago, which is physically on site, but it's not a Disney hotel. So it's kind of a quasi Disney hotel, but this was my first time physically staying off site. And the way that we did it was through an Airbnb condo. The first condo that we had actually didn't work out great. I had it booked for the whole month, but the Wi-Fi and TV never worked. So they moved us to a different condo. And I'm not going to offer up my experience as the way to do it because it was my first time. And, you know, doing something once does not make you an expert. But I do hope to, in the future, have a podcast or a blog post about offsite tips because I certainly did learn some things in the process. And I think I might be able to get Heather involved in that because she stayed offsite a lot. And when she came to Disney World in June to stay with me for a few days, she had a lot of information to share that I think would be helpful to you. So we may expand on this whole offsite thing in the future. But one thing I definitely was aware of is that my annual pass came in super handy as an offsite person. Now, I always have an annual pass because I'm there often enough to justify it. But when you're offsite, it's even more handy because your parking is not included. When you're on site, you get free parking if you happen to have a car. If you're off site, you have to pay $20 a day. But if you have an annual pass, it's included. So every time I would show my annual pass, I was like $20, $20, $20. And it makes it definitely worth it. Another thing that you get with annual passes is a free Magic Band. So if you're off site, you don't have to buy that. And with the annual pass, you also get free photo downloads. So basically, you get the Memory Maker, which costs like $150, $160, that you get that included with an annual pass. So for that reason, I think most people staying off site should have at least one annual pass per group because you only need one annual pass. You only need one annual pass to get that free parking, to get those photo downloads, and to get the discounts that are also offered on merchandise and food at some places. Between 10 and 20% is the discount there. Anyway, I did a little chart because while I was there, I was trying to do the math in my head about who should get an annual pass and where the break-even point was and all that. So of course, I put it into a spreadsheet and then put that into a graphic, which I will include in the show notes so that you can see if getting one annual pass for your group actually would be cheaper and more convenient than just a regular Disney World ticket, even if you're only going once. A lot of times that makes sense. This trip was also my first time driving. No, one time previously, I think it was last year, my son and I drove to NASA, to Cape Canaveral, and I rented a car for the day. But I had never rented a car for a whole trip, and this time I had a car for the whole month. So that was a whole different experience. And I really did like having the car available to get to and from the parks, even as an offsite person who was about 20 minutes away, I could be there much faster than an on-site guest who was taking the buses. And I have been a bus rider at Disney World for 11 years. So I'm very familiar with that process. I've never really minded it, but the car was definitely convenient except for going to and from Magic Kingdom. What a pain that often was. My suggestion is if you plan to drive to Magic Kingdom, whether you're on-site or off-site, is that you take the time that the GPS tells you it's going to take. So if it says it's going to be 10 minutes between your hotel and Magic Kingdom, add another 30. If it says it's going to be 20 minutes, add another 30. It's going to take an extra 30 minutes because you have to park and you have to get over to the Ticket Transportation Center. And then from there, you have to take a ferry or a monorail over to Magic Kingdom. You need at least 30 minutes. And if you want to catch the opening show at Magic Kingdom, which usually takes place about 20 minutes before the official opening, then use that as the time that you want to be there. So if 8:40 is the opening show and it takes you, you know, 20, you're gonna have to do the math, 20 minutes to get to Magic Kingdom, an extra 30 minutes for the whatever, then you need to be leaving your hotel probably around 7:30. So it's just kind of a pain. If I was staying on site at Disney World, I would probably use on-site transportation or Uber to get to Magic Kingdom. just to save some time because that was totally a pain to do. But everything else was a lot more convenient than I had anticipated. Anyway, staying offsite in general was a good experience. I definitely did not like being out of the bubble. I'm very much an in the bubble girl. I like being in that Disney bubble, but the ability to stay longer and have more space, and we cooked some meals and we were able to do laundry. And when you're changing your clothes twice a day because of the heat, you often have to do laundry a lot more. I did like that. So I think that we'll probably do a lot more offsite stays in the future, but I'm probably toggling between the two, on-site, off-site. I kind of like them both, pros and cons to each one. One downside, one sad sort of thing that happened in June during the trip was all those news stories that came out of Orlando were taking place while we were there. And a lot of people have said, why didn't you put out a podcast about the sad stories? And, I don't have anything to add that you really haven't heard already. You know, there were a lot of tragic situations that happened a few days in a row, but the way that it, a lot of questions that came out of that from people is about security at Disney World and how that affects future travelers. And really, in our experience, while we were there, security pretty much stayed the same as before those incidents, which is to say that metal detectors are being used at the parks. Sometimes they're random, and sometimes everyone's required to go through them. And I don't know the pattern to that. It seemed to be sort of random in how they chose that system. But bottom line is, there's a very good chance that you will be chosen after bag check to go through a metal detector. And that's just an extra step before you go through the turnstiles. But anyway, that stayed the same pretty much. I can't say, you know, going forward how Disney will handle security. But while I was there, right in the middle of the tragedy of it, in the height of the emotion, the security basically stayed the same. Around the beaches at the hotels, there are now fences that blend in. They are styled in the same way that the hotels are, and so they're not very obtrusive. But the bottom line is that going in the water, particularly in the evenings, is not safe. And so now the fence is a reminder of that, to just stay out of the lakes. So let's talk about the new stuff, which is really the reason that I was there for a whole month. And the first thing that we did was Animal Kingdom, because Animal Kingdom new stuff started actually at the very end of May. But when we arrived, it had been open for a few days. There were a few things that we wanted to try that were new, and that was Jungle Book Alive with Magic, which is the nighttime show at Animal Kingdom. That's kind of the interim show before Rivers of Light, since they've had delays with that. The other was Tiffin's, their new restaurant, and the attached lounge, by the way. It's kind of part of one building. The nighttime version of the Kilimanjaro Safari ride and the Tree of Life Awakenings, which is a short animation that plays on the Tree of Life with some music. And there's four different versions of that. So one of the things that I observed, and this wasn't just because it was so incredibly hot during our trip, but evenings Animal Kingdom are a fantastic time to be there. If you have to do only a half day at Animal Kingdom, I would choose the evenings easily, because it's such a fantastic time to be there. Because not only is it cooler, but they have really made the park feel alive. There's entertainment in every section of the park. So as you move between areas, you're going to hear live music. And the fact that there are now attractions that have a nighttime version is fantastic. Riding Expedition Everest at night is different than during the day, and it has a single rider line. So usually it does. It doesn't always, but usually it does. Makes it nice. And so I just absolutely love being there at night. It's one of my favorite things that's happened at Disney World in years, is the ability to be at Animal Kingdom at night. And you have to remember, up until now, Animal Kingdom has been closed around 5 or 6 in the evening. So the nighttime was really not an option, hardly ever. So this is like a whole new world has opened up. And so if I was doing a half day at Animal Kingdom, I would definitely choose the night. So let me talk about each of the new things that open. I have a feeling this episode is going to run a lot longer than normal, because I'm just now getting started on some of this new stuff. Okay, so the one that everybody wants to know about is Jungle Book Alive with Magic. And I know that there have been mixed reviews of it, and so I went in knowing that, but also with an open mind, because I tend to like things more than most people. I'm not super cynical about Disney stuff. And I go in wanting to like it. So Jungle Book Alive with Magic is, in my opinion, a beautiful show. I love the retelling of the Jungle Book story. I thought the projections on the water screens were great. Some people have said that they were hard to see, but every single time that I saw the show, I posted pictures, videos, Snapchats, etc. And every single time you could see it. I mean, I wasn't using any kind of trickery to make it more legible, but I saw it a few times, and every time the water screens were clear. So that was not an issue for us. In terms of the seating, there are three different seating options, just like at Fantasmic, which is you can get a dining package, you can get a fast pass, or you can do standby. For this particular show, there's no real advantage to the dining package, which puts you in a central section, but that's not an advantage for this particular show. We did the dining package twice. So that is not a super advantage. On the other hand, standby to me is too risky because there's very little capacity to allow standby in. And a lot of the people in the standby line were lining up at least an hour ahead of time. So to me, that's not a great experience. My preference would be to get a fast pass for the show. And that way you have a guaranteed spot and you don't have to line up quite as far ahead of time. Now, once you're in, there are two types of seats. One is like a stone seat and the other is wooden. The stone seats, I believe, I'm trying to picture it. The bottom portion of every section, I believe, has the stone seats and the top has the wooden seats. I believe that is correct. But when you're going during hotter months, those stone seats retain the heat from the day. And with all the bodies sort of, you know, sitting close together and the heat from a stone and the already hot temperatures, you can get so sweaty. And so my preference by the end of the month, I'd figure this out, is just to sit on the wooden seats because they are not going to make you as hot as the stone seats. And the fast pass would be my choice on future trips to get the fast pass option as opposed to the dining package. However, let's talk about Tiffin's though. You can get the dining package at Tiffin's. That's one of your choices. You can also do Husker House. Both are good restaurants. This was my first time trying Tiffin's, and I ate there a couple of times. Tiffin's is fantastic food. I will tell you that we are adventurous eaters. We will try most anything. And that's actually my son's favorite part about going on this trip with me, is that we got to eat so many different kinds of food. So I love the food. It is not cheap. It is quite expensive. And so it's a signature restaurant. So if you're on the dining plan, it's 2 credits. But if you're paying cash like I was, it's just a big bill. But I did think the food was fantastic. It is not busy. It's easy to get into, and great service, beautiful interior. The attached lounge is beautiful with fantastic drinks, fantastically strong drinks, I might add. But I love Tiffin's in general. I just don't think that the dining package is necessary to get a good view. So if you want to do the two separately, I think that would make a lot of sense. Thirdly, the nighttime Kilimanjaro Safari. So you have the daytime Kilimanjaro Safari, and now they offer a nighttime version. I did this a couple of times, and a lot of the success of this attraction depends on the driver. So the first driver that we had didn't really say much at all. And in fact, there's a portion when you're on the savannah where the sky is lit up. They've have this sunset that they have put in place on the savannah. And it's very noticeable when you're driving at night and all of a sudden the sky is lit up on one end and the driver never even addressed it. And I could not figure out what was happening. And it was actually really irritating. So we came back, and the second driver was fantastic. And I'm not really into complaining if at all possible, but I am into leaving compliments. So instead of complaining about the first driver, we just left a compliment for the second one at guest relations, because I think they'll get better at this as time goes on, knowing what to say when you actually can't see as much as during the day. But a lot of it does depend on the driver. So I did like the nighttime safari. It's really easy to get on it after the Jungle Book show. You know, you can walk onto it most of the time without a wait. And there are animals that can be more active at night, particularly the lions. So I actually posted a picture of a lion on Instagram right after we got off the safari, because that's not something you would see during the day because they are usually asleep. So, you know, without a wait, I think it's worth going on it again. So if you want to go on it during the day and then after Jungle Book, you can usually head over there without much of a wait. So I just wouldn't have as high expectations at night as you might during the daytime version. And then my favorite way to end a day at Animal Kingdom, or a night at Animal Kingdom, is the Tree of Life Awakening. So the Tree of Life on the front side, it doesn't have these on the back side, but on the front side, as you are facing it when you go into the park, it has these productions on the Tree of Life with music. And they're short animations, and there's four different versions of it. And I think they play every 10 minutes or so. So on the way out of the park, I would just park myself in front of the Tree of Life and wait for the next animation to begin, watch it, you know, for a couple minutes, and then leave for the day. So they're really adorable and beautiful. Some are better than others, but definitely my favorite way to end an Animal Kingdom night. All right, so I think that wraps up Animal Kingdom. Let's move on to Hollywood Studios. The new thing at Hollywood Studios is the Star Wars Galactic Spectacular. And this has been a little bit confusing to people because the previous nighttime show is also Star Wars, but it was a Star Wars fireworks show that they had had for years, mostly during Star Wars weekends. And then recently they were playing it almost nightly. So they just changed it to a different version called Star Wars Galactic Spectacular. Now, I love the previous Star Wars fireworks because I'm a fireworks freak. I even got married on July 4th and we had our own fireworks show at the reception. But you have to go into this new show with different expectations because it's really an experience that includes lots of different elements. And fireworks are one of those elements. And so this new Star Wars Galactic Spectacular is projections that are on the Chinese movie theater where the great movie ride is. And there's lasers and fire there's a lot of elements to it. And fireworks are behind all of that. So it's a great show with all the elements included. It's just not purely fireworks like it was before. One downside to this new show is where you have to stand to see it. So with the old fireworks, you could easily stand at the front of the park and watch the fireworks, and then you could make a quick exit because you're at the front of the park before everybody else leaves. With this new show, you cannot do that. You can't see it. In fact, the first time I saw the show, I was standing kind of in the middle and I didn't even realize how much I had missed. So I went back and saw it a couple more times and stood closer, and it's way, way better. Unfortunately, you have to stake out a spot for that because that area will fill up quickly. There are two, I don't have a graphic prepared yet for this viewing area, but right in front of the movie theater, there are two pillars where the projectors reside for the show, and standing between those or even closer is the ideal viewing spot. Now, one downside to this is that if you're trying to see Fantasmic and this, it can be difficult. So if, for instance, Fantasmic's at 9 o'clock and you would get out of there about 9:25 or 9:30, something like that, and then the Star Wars Galactic Spectacular starts at 9:45, you don't have time to get to a spot with a good view. The ideal situation is if there are two Fantasmics, you could see Star Wars Galactic Spectacular first and then go over to Fantasmic afterwards. So the timing of that might typically be 9:45 for the Star Wars show, 10:30 for the last Fantasmic. But that's not a guarantee, and there often is only one Fantasmic. I don't know if they will tweak that schedule a bit as time goes on or not, but I do find it difficult to do Fantasmic and then the Star Wars. So you either have to pick, or you have to settle for a less than ideal situation or viewing spot, because you do have to be up close to see all the elements of the new show. It's just perfect timing because I had just created a graphic showing people how to leave Fantasmic to get a good spot to watch the fireworks, and that is completely null and void now because that doesn't work. You kind of have to be up close. And finally, Epcot. A lot of new things happening at Epcot. There were three new attractions that opened in June, and we were there on opening day. I think we were among the first, 50 people to ride or visit all these attractions. So the first was Soarin' Around the World. Soarin' Over California is what it used to be called, and now it's Soarin' Around the World. As you can guess, the imagery is worldwide instead of just over the state of California. And it is fantastic. So Soarin' also added a new theater. Used to have only two theaters, now there's three, and the wait times have been much, much more reasonable, much like Toy Story Mania at Hollywood Studios, which now has a third track, and the wait times have been greatly reduced. Soren is also in that camp where you used to see weights that were easily, you know, a couple of hours, and it just doesn't happen like that anymore usually. And it is a beautiful show. I like it. There are new scents associated with the scenes, and I definitely have some of my favorite scenes on that. I did find it much more helpful to be, there's three different ride vehicles per theater, and A, B, and C, and B is a much better view. It always has been a better view, but I think it's even more so now than before, because we actually, I've done all of them on this new version of Soren. And B, just, it looked a lot better. I actually found some weird distortion when riding A and C. So if you want to be patient and request B, then, you know, that might be worth it for you. And front row is the most ideal. I have a story about riding in the first row of B in just a minute, because we had a kind of a magical Epcot day. So anyway, Soren Around the World is great, but the lines on that one are not as long as they used to be. So it's not as difficult as we might have remembered in a previous version. The other two things that opened were Anna and Elsa's Royal Summer House. I guess it's pronounced Summer Hoose, but it's the summer house for Anna and Elsa. They moved out of Princess Fairy Tale Hall at Magic Kingdom, and they moved into Epcot, into this new summer house. And it's in the Norway Pavilion, and it's a cute little house that you enter, and it does not have a fast pass, which I think originally was shocking to most of us. But through some Disney magic, they have been able to keep the wait times down. So I visited a couple times, never waited more than 20 minutes. You will meet each of the sisters separately. They're in the same room, but you meet one, take pictures, then you go and meet the other. Just remember to scan your magic band for pictures each time. I forgot to do it once and ended up with only half the pictures. But anyway, it's super cute. I wouldn't worry too much about the wait time on that, because so far it has not really exceeded 20 minutes that often, especially if you visit it during earlier or later hours. Midday, it might get a little bit more. And finally, Frozen Ever After, which is the most difficult of anything I've mentioned so far. Frozen Ever After is also in the Norway Pavilion, and it is the new ride. They closed Maelstrom, and they took a year or more to reskin it into Frozen Ever After, and it is adorable. All Frozen lovers are going to love this attraction. The animatronics are fantastic. I think it is the cutest. However, it breaks down a lot. And even when it doesn't break down, the wait times are crazy. So the ideal situation for Frozen Ever After is to have a fast pass. However, I think Frozen Ever After is going to end up being like Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, or it is, where the fast passes are hard to get, and mostly only on-site guests are going to be able to snag those, because they get them sooner than off-site guests. So Frozen Ever After at rope drop, it's crazy, because, you know, you're with a big crowd, and I feel like everyone's being trampled, and it was just a little intense. I think with little ones, that would be very uncomfortable. So ideally, you should have a fast pass for it. If you don't have a fast pass, I would show up to Epcot at least 45 minutes before the official opening to put yourself toward the front of those lines, so that when they do open the park and you head towards the World Showcase, that you're towards the front of the pack and your wait time is decreased. But I don't like the way that pack feels right now, because it's so intense with everybody kind of heading in that direction. But that might be your only option if you cannot get a fast pass. If you want to do Frozen Ever After and then Anna and Elsa's Royal Summer House back to back, that might be a nice pairing in the morning. By the way, a lot of people know the World Showcase doesn't usually open until 11 a.m., but now the Norway Pavilion is open at 9 a.m. with the rest of the park, and that includes places to eat, shop, the rides, the meet and greets. It's open at 9 a.m., just like Future World is. So Frozen Ever After, great ride, breaks down a lot, long lines. Highly recommend a fast pass. Now, the next question is, how do you tour? And we're still kind of thinking about this. I'm going to tell you a story about how Heather and I did everything in Epcot. And this is not going to be necessarily applicable to everyone, but it was a magical thing for us to be able to do. So we started our Epcot morning with the Garden Grill breakfast reservation. It was an 8:05 a.m. breakfast reservation. So we were in as early as possible. And we got there because we were among the very, very first people there. They had all four characters at Garden Grill line up and take a picture with us, which was fantastic because you don't get that later in the day. So we got a picture with all of them, and then they started bringing all this delicious food. Garden Grill, it has such good food, and they bring it to you, and the characters come to you, and it's so much more laid back, as you've heard me say in previous podcasts, maybe. It's so much more laid back than most character meals, especially buffets, because all the food is brought to you and it's so tasty. So anyway, we are eating it. They also have mimosas on the menu, by the way, if that's something you're interested in. I may have had one with my breakfast. So anyway, it wasn't busy at all, and we were able to eat relatively quickly, have pictures with all the characters. They visited the table many times. We got our check, and we thought that they were going to tell us that we could get lined up for Soarin' because it's in the same building. And so I thought we would just be at the front of the line for the day. But what I didn't know is they were going to let all of us early Garden Grill diners have our own ride before the park was even open. So we all went into the theater. And there was only one row full, and that was that center ride vehicle in the first row, and only about 10 or 12 of us rode for the very first ride of the day. So before anybody was even allowed into the park to do rides, we had already ridden it once. And it was just magical. It was a surprise. I didn't know that that was a thing. And now I don't know if I can do Epcot any other way. So anyway, if you were to do that, then you could easily then... if you have a Fast Pass for Frozen Ever After, then you could head to Test Track and ride that. And then you could do Frozen Ever After with a Fast Pass with a lot of other things sort of peppered in the middle. You also can do Test Track in the single rider line. So that is an option if you have children that are old enough and comfortable enough to do single rider. Then that is another option. Without Garden Grill and the sort of magical moment that I just mentioned, doing Future World or doing Epcot might be a 2-day event. It might make sense to do Frozen Ever After one day and Soarin' another day or something like that. It's just really tricky to do Frozen Ever After, Test Track, Soarin'. And if you want to throw in anything else that has a line like Meeting Joy and Sadness, then you're facing lines immediately because all those things have lines that build right away. So my suggestion would be if you want to do all of them, that you might try to split it up into two or do the thing that I mentioned, which is to get a Garden Grill reservation, fantastic meal, and a really good way to save some time early in the morning. So anyway, that is my experience from all the new stuff at Disney World. And I look forward to sharing more information with you on future episodes. But I hope that will satiate you for a while because I know people are really wanting to hear some thoughts about the new things since they just opened. Before we wrap it up today, I do have a quick tip. I mentioned earlier that it might make sense for one person to have an annual pass in your party. So it's kind of related to that. But the quick tip is that you can have multiple types of tickets linked to your account. So for instance, if you book a package for a future trip, but you already have an annual pass, then you end up with two types of tickets in your account. But what you need to do is call Disney World to set their priority for your ticket so that when you go through the gates of the parks, they know which one to scan first. So for example, my son and I do have annual passes just because we're there enough to justify it, but I also wanted to book free dining for a family trip later this year. So that means that you have to book tickets because that's a package that includes tickets. And I didn't want to waste those tickets. So what I did was I called Disney World and I said, can you move my annual pass to the top priority so that when I'm there with my family and I have a package that my package tickets don't scan while I still have a valid annual pass. So anyway, I don't know how many people that will relate to, but if you happen to have multiple tickets in your account, you do not have to waste any of them if you call Disney World and make sure their priority is set correctly. So I hope that is helpful. I think that will wrap up this episode of WJW Prep to Go. For more information on the show, you can look in the show notes in your podcast app, or you can go to the website, click the podcast tab, and find episode 128. Until next time, I will see you on the site.